I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania Governor Republican Tom Corbett surprised a lot of people when he said recently he supported non-discrimination bills in the legislature. House Bill 300 and Senate Bill 300 both banned discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodation because of someone's sexual orientation and gender identity or expression. The bills amend the Pennsylvania Human Relations Act, which bans similar discrimination based on race, color, gender, disability, religion, national origin. The question is whether these bills will get out of committee, and if they do, how will members of the legislature vote? We did give Governor Corbett's office a call and asked someone to join us, either the governor or a spokesperson. They did decline to join us, but I'm happy to say that Representative Brian Sims is with us here in our Philadelphia studio, co-sponsor of House Bill 300. He's a Democratic member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, serving the 182nd District here in Philadelphia, the first openly gay person elected to the Pennsylvania legislature. And nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you for having me back.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can tweet us at Marty Moss Cohen. So, Brian, as the law stands today, can someone be fired in Pennsylvania if they are gay or lesbian, or be denied a hotel, motel room, or even denied the renting of a house because they're gay or lesbian?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, in about 70% of the state, and I say that because there are a lot of municipalities like Philadelphia that over the last 30 years have made it illegal. But I remind my colleagues quite often that as a sitting state legislator, if I was having the conversation that you and I are having right now in 70% of the state, that I could be kicked out of the restaurant I'm having it in. My landlord could kick me out of the apartment I live in for having this conversation.
And does that happen in Pennsylvania? Do we know? Are there cases of that?
Absolutely, it does happen. Unfortunately, the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission is not able to review cases of specific discrimination against LGBT people, but they receive complaints of it throughout the year. There was a chairman a number of years ago, Steve Glassman, who was the chairman of the Human Relations Commission, who would speak often about the number of complaints that they would receive each year and how frustrating it was to not be able to respond in the way that they did to similar complaints.
So how is House Bill 300 written?
Well, as you mentioned, House Bill 300 is going to amend the Pennsylvania Human Relations Act. Every state and the federal government prohibit discrimination, certain types of discrimination, against certain classes of people. In Pennsylvania, the types of discrimination we prohibit are discrimination in housing, employment, and public accommodations. And those tend to make sense to people. Housing, the renting of a home, the sale of a home, employment, not just hiring and firing, but advancing somebody in an office. And public accommodations is really anywhere that you can go as a member of the public, from a park bench to a McDonald's. And in Pennsylvania, you're protected because of your race, your religion, your nationality, your ethnicity, but you're not protected because of your sexual orientation or your gender identity, or your perceived sexual orientation or gender identity. And it's proved to be a huge problem, and it's a problem that states all around us have addressed, and Pennsylvania falls far behind our neighbors.
Are there exceptions in House Bill 300?
There always are. One of the frustrating things, if you will, about trying to pass 300 over the last 8 years is that the opposition tends to come from the Pennsylvania Catholic Conference, mostly. It tends to be somewhat religious opposition. Well, over the years, as these types of laws have been enacted in states around the country, what we've seen is religious exceptions that are really tied time-tested, they are litigation-tested, they are relatively broader than some would like, but there's the supporters of House Bill 300, as I am. We've been comfortable with religious exceptions for a long time, yet we still hear the opponents sort of often lay claim that a bill like 300 will discriminate against religion, which is simply not the case, and it's our case to make.
And how different is House Bill 300 from Senate Bill 300?
They're not different. These are the same bill, and we're really hopeful that the governor, because these are the same bill, that will make the process for having these bills become law somewhat easier.
Representative Daryl Metcalf, chair of the State Government Committee, a Republican, and I should say to our listeners, we asked him to join us for this discussion today, and he did decline our invitation. Nonetheless, he doesn't want to bring this bill out of committee. He's quoted as saying the majority of the Republican caucus does not support this bill. So how do you get it out of committee?
Well, you know, I think there are a couple of ways. First, you know, clearly the chairman is wrong. I reached out to the chairman because I'd hoped that he'd be able to join us today, too, because I wanted to address this directly with him. You know, we believe that a majority of Republicans do support this bill, a majority of Republicans in the State House. We now have the governor supporting this bill. It is supported in general by many of the ranking Republicans in the state, certainly the ranking Democrats in the state. This bill has perhaps more co-sponsors than any piece of legislation I have voted on in the State House. We have we have half the Senate and almost half of the members of the State House support this legislation. Unfortunately, this is a case of the chairman putting his own personal, frankly, his personal religious beliefs, I believe, above his civic duty to perform his job as the chairman of a committee.
So what do you do about that? Well, I mean, how do you, and is it, do you think some of this pressure, if it comes from the governor, comes from others, will put pressure on Republican Medicaid?
I do. You know, we're going to hear from a Republican strategist later on. I'm anxious or eager to hear what he has to say because I'm not a Republican strategist. But if you know, looking at this in the way that I do, I would think that first of all, there's no hard and fast rule that this bill has to stay in the state government committee. There has been tension between the Republican leadership and Chairman Metcalf for months because of his oftentimes his very disruptive views and the how he draws I believe a spotlight away from the work that the Republican leadership feels that they're trying to do. And so with that tension now coupled with support from the governor, I think there's all the more impetus to remove this. You know, unfortunately, the state government committee in the House, unlike in the Senate, has become a place where quality legislation oftentimes mm-hmm. goes to die, and that's what we've seen with House Bill 300. So I'm hopeful that this pressure, that one option is that we can simply have this bill pulled from state government committee. The chairman's made it clear that his personal beliefs trump what I believe his civic duty is, and if that's the case, there are a number of committees where we believe that we would get a hearing.
Oh, and what would those committees be?
Well, to be honest with you, until I've had those conversations with those chairmen, we're back in session on Monday, and I don't want to get ahead of myself. But I will say that I do believe, as a number of my colleagues do, that that Mr. Chairman Metcalf isn't going to have the final say on House Bill 300.
So to be continued. It's interesting, and this is just quoting from the Philadelphia Inquirer today, three Democrats who are supporters of Senate Bill 300 seem to have the same issue. If we had this legislation kicked out of committee, Farnese said, we would have the votes, Democrat and Republican, to pass Senate Bill 300. So a similar situation in both houses.
Most definitely.
Chambers, I should say.
Yesterday we heard from Senators Stack, Senator Farnese, and Senator Dalen Leach, who has really been the primary supporter of certainly SB 300, but also marriage equality in Pennsylvania for a long time. And these are three gentlemen that know the Senate very well, and I think they've known for a long time that if SB 300 came up for a vote, that it would pass the Senate. There, you know, up until the support of the governor, there wasn't necessarily the reason to bring it through the Senate, but now there is.
Mm. Do you see the governor having clout on this particular issue?
I don't know if clout is the right word. I think what the governor coming out in support of House Bill and Senate Bill 300 does is it proves once again that support for equality is not a party issue. It's not a Republican or a Democratic thing. You know, when Senator Toomey came out in support of equality several months ago, it wasn't the quote-unquote sort of softer side of Senator Toomey. He wasn't showing a Democratic side or a progressive side. He was showing that Republicans in a conservative ideology can show support for non-discrimination. And I think that's what we're seeing mm-hmm. from the governor. The reason his support is so important is because obviously he plays a very important role in technically in this becoming law. If, you know, when Senator Toomey came out in support of equality, it was really important to show other Republicans in the state that this party line of being opposed to equality wasn't so important anymore. There are so many Republican legislators in Pennsylvania that are supportive of equality and that have wanted to stand up in support of equality, but simply it wasn't what the party allowed them to do.
Were you surprised that the governor didn't seem to know that there was non-discrimination laws in Pennsylvania? He seemed to think that the federal law covered mm-hmm. people in the state.
I don't it's not for me to question his statements. I don't know if that's entirely true. Maybe, and I think I'm going to, I'm not going to give him more credit than he's due. I think I'm going to give him the credit that he is appropriately due. The governor is a very smart attorney with a good track record as
an attorney general of Pennsylvania.
Indeed, and as an elected official. And the federal law that he spoke of actually didn't even become law until long after his role as a public attorney had begun. And so, I'm unclear if the governor legitimately thought that LGBT people in Pennsylvania were protected under some type of non-discrimination law. If that's the case, then all of the advocacy that we've done, certainly during his tenure as an elected official, somehow was lost on him. And I'm glad that he was finally able to evolve, if that's the case.
Do you think, though, as you said, these bills have been in committee for a number of years now, but do you think something is different in 2014? I mean, we do have a governor's race, and it's a new year. Do you see this as a new chance to
Absolutely.
Bring some energy to this issue?
We learned something critically important in 2012 with regard to advancing LGBT equality, and that is that whether the Republican Party believed it or not, whether individual Republican elected officials believed it or not, we learned maybe 15 years or so ago that being anti-LGBT equality in many places drew majority votes, and for no other reason than the sort of gamesmanship of campaigns, I believe, unfortunately, this anti-equality drumbeat that we'd seen for the last 10 and 15 years was very effective. But in 2012, we learned that was no longer true. And we learned that not only can Republicans be supportive of equality and still be reelected, but we learned that the majority of, certainly Pennsylvanians, but the majority of Americans are now supportive of equality. And we're going to hear the hard numbers in a little bit. But it no longer made political sense for the Republican Party as a whole to be opposed. And so what that did is it opened the doors for Republican legislators to individually address issues of equality. And, as we've seen with Senator Portman, there's not a single person in the United States that doesn't have an LGBT family member or coworker or neighbor or member of their community. And so, now what we're seeing is we're beginning to see those legislators that didn't feel like they could explore what it means to be pro-equality. And this step from the governor is one of those steps.
Even in Pennsylvania, known for being a rather conservative state in a more liberal part of the United States.
I try not to tell people we're conservative. I tend to tell people we're contemplative. Yes, we have a Republican governor.
Is that
House
a euphemism?
And Senate. I think that Pennsylvanians, frankly, with policy, like to take their time. They want to see what states around them are doing. They want to see what legislation is subject to litigation. But when Pennsylvanians are asked how they feel about equality, they are in support of equality. And they have been for some time now. I perhaps the most conservative place that Pennsylvania is in the Capitol building in Harrisburg. But beyond that, I don't know that this state is as conservative as our legislature or our laws.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. We have two guests waiting in the wings. We're talking about two bills and committees in the Pennsylvania legislature that, if passed, would ban discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodation because of a person's sexual orientation. And our guest is Representative Brian Sims, a Democrat from Philadelphia, serving the 182nd district in the legislature. We'll be joined by Terry Madonna, director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs, in just a moment or two. And we have Charlie Giroux waiting in the wings. He's a Republican strategist. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Is it time to get these bills out of committee? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA Continuing Education invites you to join their community of artists of all ages and levels this spring with a lineup of drawing, painting, sculpture, and printmaking classes, weekend workshops, pre-college Saturday classes for high school students, and master classes with noted artists. Registration is now open, and classes begin January 21st. For details, pafa.edu/ce.
Few reporters know Washington like NPR's Cokie Roberts. Hi, I'm Dave Davies, inviting you to join me for a timely and in-depth discussion I'll be hosting with Cokie at the Merriam Theater Thursday, January 23rd. Call 1-888-345-9499 and make a $10 a month sustaining membership gift to WHYY. We'll send you two tickets to this event as our way of saying thanks. Again, that's 1-888-345-9499 to make your sustaining contribution and reserve your seats now. Thanks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, Medicaid expansion isn't keeping people out of the emergency room, but it is succeeding on other measures, improving health and lowering medical bills. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, talking with Representative Brian Sims about House Bill and Senate Bill 300. We are also taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. If you have any questions or comments, certainly join our conversation. Joining us now is Terry Madonna, Director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs, also Professor of Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. He directs the Franklin and Marshall College poll. And Terry Madonna, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty and Representative Sims.
And I should say that you're on some golf course somewhere in Florida, but we appreciate you joining us, Terry. Where do Pennsylvanians stand on this issue of LGBT civil rights?
Let's separate two things out. About 60-70% of Pennsylvania voters support, you know, legislation that would end discrimination, you know, housing and employment discrimination. And in a poll that I did in February of this past year, 2012, I think it was the first public poll released in the history of the state that showed majority support for same-sex marriage, for the legalization of same-sex marriage, translation, end the Defense of Marriage Act in our state, and legalize same-sex marriage. I did a subsequent poll in May that showed the percentage up a couple of percentage points. And the third point I would make is, I think in the years that I've been polling, that's now more than two decades, and reading polls regularly, I've not seen change on a social/cultural issue such as we've seen for gender equality and gay marriage than any other issue that we could talk about. The change has been transformative in our society, both in our state and nationally as well.
And Terry, looking at some of your polling, it looks like back in 2006, this has to do with gay marriage or marriage equality. 33% of Pennsylvanians supported
exactly.
It. Today, it's closer to 52%.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, and what's going on, if you take a look at younger folks, let's say 18 to 30, for the sake of this discussion, we're talking about percentages 60, over 70% in some polls. And here's another observation that I think is important. It's not just being heavily driven by young folks, but older people in older generations are less strongly opposed to it than they were. One of the points that Representative Sims made that I think is really worth making is that it is now impossible to talk to just about anyone that does not have someone in their family who, you know, is gay, has some relationship with someone who is, and I was really impressed, or maybe that's the wrong word, but Governor Christie, when he was asked the question about what he would do if a daughter of his came home and said she was gay, he said he'd hug her.
Hmm.
I mean, think about how profound that is, how profound a change that is. We're not talking about rejection. We're talking about acceptance.
Well, let me get Brian Sims back in on the conversation. Do these numbers make sense to you, Brian?
They do, and we talked a little bit during the break about how fast these numbers have changed. And Terry, I suppose my question for you is, you, as you said, you've been studying these numbers for 20 years. Given how quickly we've seen a change, how much that change mirrors what we're seeing around the country, what kind of an impact do you think that this is going to have on the upcoming elections in Pennsylvania?
Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to certainly be an issue. Look, as far as I know, all of the Democratic candidates are for gay marriage and obviously for, you know, workplace equality. Governor Corbett is for workplace equality, but he said he would veto, as you know, you're in the legislature, you know, any effort to overturn Pennsylvania's Defense of Marriage Act. In fact, he's defending it in court. I think the gender equality issue is more likely to resonate with voters at the moment because I think it has a lot more support. And I just politically as a tactic, I think the LGBT community is wiser to push that front quicker because I think that makes a lot of sense. Even to people who aren't, you know, don't want gay marriage at this point, many of them do support, you know, equality in the workplace and in housing. So I think that would be the place to go. And I do think it's going to play a role in the campaign. Now, it's probably not going to be dispositive. It's still the economy and taxes and other things. But it's certainly going to play a role. There is no doubt about that.
And I'm curious, Terry, where Governor Corbett's standing is today among the residents of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, he's got the lowest job performance of any governor seeking re-election since we permitted that to occur. First governor to seek re-election was Milton Schapp in 1974. Governor Corbett's job performance numbers, depending how they're measured, let's just not worry about how the question's worded and say about somewhere about a third of the voters approve of the job he's doing, and over 55% say that they would rather see someone else as governor than just elect Governor Corbett. Now, we have a long way to go, make no mistake about it, but as we've talked about, the Democratic candidates are certainly for it. We don't know who will emerge out of that crowded Democratic primary field, but Governor Corbett has a lot of ground to make up, and should he win re-election, it would be historic. All the ratings from my friend Larry Sabato down at the University of Virginia to others, Saliza at the Washington Post, all rank Governor Corbett as the most endangered incumbent governor in the country, regardless of party.
Terry, the final question, then we're going to have to say goodbye to you. But, you know, wondering how this issue of workplace equality, as we're describing it during this hour, how that would play with the governor's base. And this, you know, these are the people that go to the polls when it comes to the primary.
Sure. I think Representative Sims is correct. I mean, I think we're moving beyond that aspect of an issue, which is controversial. I think if the legislature were to do this, and I certainly understand, as he does and as you do, the problem in the state government committee in the House where that would have to start from, you know, where the chairman is certainly, or the committee is dead set against it. I do think if the legislature were to pass this and the governor were to sign it, I think it would be applauded by most Pennsylvanians. I don't see on the issue of equality a huge political issue. Now, there are pockets of the state where that will not be the case.
Right.
There are parts in this state where that certainly will not be true. But I think statewide, it's not going to be harmful for the governor to sign a gender equality bill.
Terry Madonna, going to let you get back to the golf course. Thank you so much.
I'm not playing. It's too cold.
Okay. Even in Florida.
Thanks, Barty. Even in Florida.
Even in Florida. Terry Madonna, Director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs, Professor of Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College, directs the Franklin and Marshall College poll. Brian, anything you want to add? We've got a second guest waiting to join us, but any thoughts before we get him in?
All I would add is that I'm not surprised one bit. You know, over the last number of years, I've had an opportunity to travel the entire state of Pennsylvania. And one of the things that I've seen is that, you know, Terry's right. People may not exactly know how they feel about marriage equality, but they don't believe that the state should be in the business of allowing discrimination against the people they work with, the members of their family, the members of their church, their communities.
Let's find out from our guests and also from our listeners. Again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Talking about workplace equality is probably easier to say that than things like non-discrimination. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. And is Pennsylvania ready for these bills to be passed in the legislature? Joining us now is Charlie Giroux, and he's a Harrisburg-based Republican strategist, CEO of Quantum Communications, which works with the Corbett gubernatorial campaign, joins us on Radio Times. And I should say to our listeners, his opinions are his own. He is not here to represent the governor. And Charlie Giroux, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be with you, Marty, and with you, Representative Sims.
And I'm curious, a lot of people were surprised when the governor came out in support of House Bill and Senate Bill 300. Were you surprised?
No, not at all. And I'm when you say a lot of people, I kind of wonder who they are, because The governor has a long record through his office in the attorney general's seat and through his personal life of not only being against any form of discrimination, but really against any form of even insensitivity. And when he first took office, the governor signed an executive order which guaranteed the protection that Representative Sims' bill extends to others, to those who serve in state government as employees there. So, I mean, he's had a long history of opposing discrimination against gay and lesbian people as well as others. I mean, that's who he is.
Well, but what's interesting is that he didn't seem to know, at least this is what he said when he was asked about it, that he didn't know that the gays and lesbians were protected in Pennsylvania. He thought they were protected by a federal law. Can you explain or help us understand that?
Well, I'm a lawyer, but I don't play one on radio or TV, Marty. But
fair enough.
I'm a little, to be very honest, because it's not an area of the law where I practiced, I was a little, and still I'm a little confused about what the overlay of federal law is. And so, you know, one of the things that the opponents of Representative Sims' bill have said from time to time is, well, we don't need this because there already is statutory federal law that protects Pennsylvanians, and I honestly don't know what it is. I support Representative Sims' bill. I'm glad that the governor does, but I don't think it's as easy as saying this is an open and shut, everybody should know situation, because as a lawyer for more than 30 years, I'll be very candid, I didn't know.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Brian Sims, let me get you back into the conversation.
And it's a fair question, especially if it's the kind of question that is keeping people from supporting HB 300 or SB 300. It's a great question to address. And the simple answer is this: as all federal law does, it addresses much larger institutions. By having a Pennsylvania law, we're able to address all of those scenarios, essentially, which federal law is not catching, which happens to be a good portion of the discrimination that's happening in Pennsylvania. So as every state around us right now, except for Ohio and West Virginia, has done, we need to pass what essentially is domestic non-discrimination legislation to fill in law what we call penumbras, the spaces in between.
And one of the points that Representative Sims made earlier that I think is worth repeating is that a distinct number of Pennsylvania municipalities, more than 30, have already passed their own ordinances prohibiting such discrimination. And he's also correct that Pennsylvania is the only state in this quadrant of the country that doesn't currently have a law in place similar to the one that he's proposing.
And I also read, Charlie Giroux, that just about all the Fortune 500 companies that have located in Pennsylvania all have do not discriminate against their gay and lesbian gender LGBT employees.
That is correct. 26 Fortune 500 companies in Pennsylvania already have their own private policies that basically say precisely what Representative Sims is proposing be statutory law here.
Now, you're not in the legislature, but I'd be curious about how you propose to get these bills, which seem to certainly have support of the governor and other members of the Republican Party, how you get them out of committee.
Well, that's a good question, and I know that Representative Sims is going to work on that when he comes back here. Part of it may have to do with which committee it's referred to, but one of the things that wasn't said earlier is that there is strong bipartisan support for House Bill 300, and there is bipartisan support in the Senate for it as well. So that represents a little bit of a political shift, and the one thing that wasn't mentioned when you asked about what the impact of the governor's being for it is it eliminates the possibility of a veto. There certainly would have been the possibility, had the governor said, I'm opposed to this, to have it pass the legislature and still not become law because of the stroke of the pen. There certainly, I don't think Representative Sims would agree, would be the votes necessary to override such a veto. So by eliminating the possibility of a veto, it's a very significant thing that Governor Corbett has added to the debate.
Do you see Brian Sims, Governor Corbett, do you see him as pro-gay?
It's tough. The day after I joined a number of my colleagues and introduced the Pennsylvania Marriage Equality Act, the governor, in apologizing for equating marriage equality to pedophilia, said that it was like marrying a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old. Then they apologized and said, really, it's more like marrying a brother or sister. And I find that, sure, it's offensive. It's more in our articulate than anything else. And I don't know that anybody who I would define as pro-gay would utter such a thing. But I think there's a huge difference between being pro-gay and being anti-gay. You know, the governor has a whole slew of issues that I believe are critically important for him to address, and this is one of them. But I think that his support for House Bill 300 certainly shows that he believes, as a Republican and as a conservative, that he can support equality, and that it is not, again, it's not showing a Democratic side or showing a liberal side. And I think that's what's most important. Do I think he's pro-gay? I don't think that somebody who's pro-gay would equate me getting married to me marrying my brother.
Charlie Girola, let me pick up on something. And Brian Sims talked about the Pennsylvania Marriage Equality Act. And I know you don't speak for the governor, but it's interesting that he does oppose discrimination in the workplace and accommodations, but he does not support gay marriage. How do you understand, I guess, the thinking that goes behind that position?
Well, first of all, you know, my understanding is we're here today to talk about Representative Sims' bill, and I want to do that. I want to mention a couple of other aspects of that. But with respect to the question of gay marriage, the governor has said that the legislature, which presumably represents the manifest wishes of the citizens of Pennsylvania, has passed the legislation. It is, in his judgment, his duty to defend that statutory act, because unfortunately the Attorney General of Pennsylvania chose not to. I mean, she's the one that said you can't pick and choose which laws you defend. That's what she did in this case. It's now the responsibility of the administration to defend that law if it's found to be unconstitutional. That's a totally different question, but I think it is fair to say to all of the listeners that the state of law right now with respect to gay marriage is very, very much in flux. We don't know where that's going to go, particularly with the Supreme Court yesterday holding the same-sex marriage situation in Utah. We don't know where that's going to go. So until the law changes, Governor Corbett has said that he's obligated to enforce and defend the current laws of the Commonwealth passed by the General Assembly, which, as I say, presumably represents the manifest wishes of the people and was passed in bipartisan fashion.
Well, let me give Brian Sims a chance to respond to that. We'll take a very short break, and then, Charlie, I'll give you a chance to talk a little bit more about House Bill after that break. But go ahead, Brian Sims.
First, what I wanted to just be clear that House Bill 300 isn't my legislation. I'm certainly a co-sponsor. I think I'm a very active co-sponsor. But Representative Dan Frankel out of Pittsburgh is the Democratic prime sponsor of this bill. And Charlie's completely right. This bill, House Bill 300 and Senate Bill 300, have Republican support and Democratic support in both the House and the Senate, and that's critically important. To the Attorney General choosing not to defend Dome in the state, you know, in truth, the Attorney General's job is to look at the lay of the land, look at Pennsylvania's laws, and determine which of those laws are constitutional or not. And in her job as Pennsylvania's attorney, after the Supreme Court's ruling, she determined that Pennsylvania's DOMA was no longer constitutional. It is, quite frankly, it's not doing her job. It's literally doing the job that we hired of her. But my question to you, Charlie, is this. If you're right, or if I followed you about legislation that makes it out of the House and the Senate being the will of the people, are you saying then that if a marriage equality bill were to make it to the desk of the governor, that you believe he would sign it?
Very quickly, Charlie, because we have to take a short break.
Again, I don't speak for the governor, and that's an issue that he will address, and you know, we're a long way down the road from that. I would respectfully disagree, Representative Sims. It's the job of the Attorney General to determine what's constitutional and what isn't. That's the job of the courts. That's why we have a tripartite system of government. It is not the job of the Attorney General to do that. It's the job of the courts. It's her job to defend the laws of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and she said so during her campaign for election.
Well, we do have to take a very short break. And, Charlie, I just want to have you stay on because I know you wanted to say a couple of more things about HB 300, SB 300. And we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about some bills in the legislature having to do with workplace equality. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY, the music of Tchaikovsky, the sound of the Philadelphia Orchestra. The January Tchaikovsky Festival begins as Stephen Huff performs the first piano concerto and Robin Tacciani conducts the fourth symphony. Tchaikovsky tickets at 215-893-1999 or online at philorg.org. This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Kimmel Center, the music of Tchaikovsky with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Gold, gold, gold. The cold sets in. Polar vortex sounds like a sci-fi villain. It's a real-life North American stalker.
Mixed up, I'm so mixed up.
Mixed up? Try the temperature in Augusta, freezing in Maine and Georgia. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI.
Today at noon on WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, novelist, essayist, and satirist Gary Steingart talks about his new memoir, Little Failure. He was a wheezing, asthmatic little boy of seven when his family emigrated from the Soviet Union to Queens, New York in 1979, after Jews were allowed to leave. It's a funny but emotional telling of his family's story and his coming of age. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about two bills in committees in the Pennsylvania legislature, SB 300, HB 300, that if passed would ban discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodation because of a person's sexual orientation. Looks like they have bipartisan support, and Republican Governor Tom Corbett said he would sign them into law if they were on his desk. Their fate, though, is uncertain. We're talking about all of this with Representative Brian Sims and Charlie Giroux. He's a Harrisburg-based Republican strategist, CEO of Quantum Communications. Charlie, you wanted to add a couple more things about what sounds like your support for these bills in the legislature.
I do support them, and I just wanted to follow up on two things. One, that Representative Sims said he is correct. It is Representative Frankel's bill in the House. It is also Representative Chris Ross, a Republican, in the House. But the thing that I wanted to make as a point here with respect to the business community, you mentioned, Marty, that the Fortune 500 companies headquartered here in Pennsylvania all have their own internal policies, which basically go with the legislation that Representative Sims is a significant co-sponsor of. And that's correct. But one of the other things is that the Pennsylvania Job Services continue to report on a very regular basis that they receive calls from headhunters and others looking to represent clients in Pennsylvania, i.e. bringing jobs here, mm-hmm. that ask about the issue of whether or not a gay person would face any barriers if they chose to relocate here. So it's a significant issue for the growth of Pennsylvania's economy, as well as, in my judgment, just the right thing to do. And, you know, we've already said it's a bipartisan issue. I don't know whether it was Representative Sims or Terry McDonough that said, you know, every family, mentioned Rob Portman, but, you know, Dick Cheney, sure. Newt Gingrich, myself, you know, we all have loved ones that are gay or lesbian.
Well, and we have to say goodbye to you, Charlie, but I want to just give Brian Sims a chance to respond. What's interesting is if you've got Fortune 500 companies or other companies looking to locate in Philadelphia and asking about, you know, where does the state stand on this issue of workplace equality, that also could be an impetus for some movement on these bills.
I'm glad Charlie brought it up. It's actually one of the critical talking points right now we make with the remaining opponents of HB 300 is how important an economic issue this is. As you said earlier, all 26 Fortune 500 companies in Pennsylvania have LGB and T inclusive non-discrimination policies, and that's really important. We talked about this bill with respect to sexual orientation, but it is also inclusive of gender identity. Importantly, inclusive of gender identity, and the economics of this, you know, shouldn't be lost on anyone. Ted Martin, the executive director of Equality Pennsylvania, speaks often about calls he hears from headhunters, calls he hears from executives in corporations who are thinking about relocating, saying, if I come to Pennsylvania, will my employees be protected? Or if I, as a potential employee, come to Pennsylvania, will I be protected? And the truth of the matter is, depending on what county you're in, what town you're in, what bridge you're crossing at the time, you may or may not be.
Charlie, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Thank you so much.
Marty, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to be on your show.
A pleasure to have you on the show. And that's Charlie Giroux, Harrisburg-based Republican strategist, again, CEO of Quantum Communications, which works for the Corbett gubernatorial campaign. But as I said, when we welcomed him to the show, his opinions are his own. Brian Sims staying with us for the rest of the hour. A Democratic member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, one of the sponsors of House Bill 300, known as the Pennsylvania Human Relations Act, and he's the first openly gay person elected to the legislature here in Pennsylvania. We've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get, looks like Liz from Allentown to join our conversation. And Liz, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Representative Sims, and hi, Marty.
Hi there.
This is Liz Bradbury from Pennsylvania Diversity Network in Allentown. I hope that Representative Sims could address, there's so much support for HB 300, and there has been for years, and even in the legislature, why it's not coming up for a vote. What's happening to it in committee that's keeping it from coming up for a vote? And I think there's some significant reasons for that, which I hope you'll address.
Sure, fair enough. Thanks for the call.
Happy to, and I think this is one of the. I'm glad Liz asked the question because really highlighting what legislators in years past have called this sort of inside baseball. It's not inside baseball. It affects all of us, so people should know exactly what's going on. Historically, House Bill 300 had always been sent to the State Government Committee, both in the House and in the Senate. And this year, it was sent to the Senate State Government Committee before it had been assigned in the House. And in internally, we were trying very hard to have the bill not assigned, obviously, to the State Government Committee in the House.
Because it's chaired by
Chairman Metcalf, again, who's made it clear that his personal views trump what I believe his civic duty is here. And so we were trying internally very hard to have it assigned somewhere else. Aside from just bucking the historic trend of that, it would send an overt statement from Republican leadership to the chairman if they were to do so. But we were really hopeful that that was going to happen. And then when it didn't, I'll admit I was one of the first people to be very frustrated when it was still sent to state government. I read that as an overt a statement of opposition to the bill from our Republican leadership. But what I've learned in the months since it was assigned is that despite our best efforts to make them pay really close attention to where it was going and why it was going there, that it really felt like it was just assigned to state government because it always had been and that's where it goes. And so what that leaves to us now is those other remedies about how to get it out. And while there are some procedural and technical ways of doing it regarding calling votes and reaching for majorities, I still think that the best way to do this is that there is no hard and fast rule that this needed to go to state government. There's certainly no hard and fast rule that once it's been assigned to the committee, it needs to stay there. What we've seen is that the chairman's behavior in the last 6 months, in the last year, has put him at odds with even the conservative members of his own legislature, of his own caucus. And certainly the leadership. And so with this increased tension between him and his own leadership, and now what we're hearing is this really divisive approach he's taking to the governor, I think those combined tensions between his own leadership and between the governor really make him persona non grata in the Capitol. And I think if that's the case, nobody's going to want to continue to give him a platform in opposition to the governor on this issue. I'm hopeful that this is the perfect storm that he's wrought upon himself to have this simply just pulled from his committee because it's the right thing to do.
And you know that there is tension within, this is not your party, but the other party related
Absolutely.
To his chairmanship.
Absolutely.
His
we
comments.
All, we all work together. We all work in the same building. The idea that the different parties don't speak and back and forth is ridiculous. We work together, we eat together, we talk together quite often. And frankly, you don't have to be a member in the Capitol to recognize the tension that exists between the chairman and between his party in general. The chairman's views are outdated. The chairman's views, frankly, I believe are now hurtful to the Republican Party, and they're not shared by the leadership of the Republican Party from Senator Toomey on down. And that's okay. Obviously, within parties, you're allowed to, we're certainly allowed to have a breadth of viewpoints. But the divisiveness and frankly, the animosity with which the chairman has approached his position and is approaching this legislation, I think is going to be the reason that it is pulled from him.
And I should add, once again, that we did invite Representative Daryl Metcalf to join us during this hour of Radio Times, and his office declined our invitation. Liz, thanks for the call. Let me see what Juliet from Lancaster has to say. Juliet, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how you doing? I'm calling because I was interested in the fact that Governor Corbett did not have any idea that the federal government did not protect gay and lesbians at the state level. I don't know many, if any, gay or lesbian people who don't know that, and that just tells me that the Governor Corbett is not involved with any gay or lesbian politicos in the Capitol, that he doesn't have anybody giving him advice or talking to him about the issues that apply to the community.
Well, that's an interesting thing to say, but I want to give Brian Sims a chance to respond. Do you think she's right?
I think, obviously, we all – many of us share the same concern. We discussed this earlier. How is it that somebody that is such an acute, supposedly such an acute public legal mind, have such a huge gap in their understanding of discrimination, and taking him at his word, and he actually didn't know? I don't know if that speaks to him as a public servant. I don't know if that speaks to him as a lawyer. But I know for certain that the governor does have LGBT people around him. I talk about the Pink Underground in Harrisburg. Harrisburg, like Washington, D.C., has, in both parties, on both sides of the aisle, in all branches of government, has plenty of out people. I also know I spoke earlier about Ted Martin from Equality, Pennsylvania. I know that several months ago, Ted met privately with the governor to talk about this issue specifically about non-discrimination. You know, I serve on a committee that's chaired by the governor's wife, and my experience with the governor's wife leads me to believe that he's also had experience with LGBT people previously in his life. So again, that certainly doesn't make up for this supposed lack in his understanding. But I do know that he has out people around him.
And interestingly, when we called the governor's office to join us, we were told to go to Equality, Pennsylvania. So I thought that was an interesting suggestion for us to do. Juliet, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. In fact, we have a tweet from Sean. What does Representative Sims think ahead for trans people? And you said we have to remember the T in LGBT.
Not just remember. I think there is going to be, and I hope people are beginning to see, an increased focus on transgender issues, because really some of the most insidious discrimination that we still see, even in those municipalities that have non-discrimination laws. You know, right now you are no more at risk in the LGBT community than you are if you are a trans woman of color. You know, in cities all across the country and in Philadelphia, trans women of color are murdered at an alarming rate and with very little repercussions. And so, you know, there's something to be said. I'm what's called a cisgendered white gay male. And in many ways, the cisgendered, C-I-S-G-E-N-D-E-R, meaning that essentially that society's definition of a masculine, I probably fit more society's definition of a masculine male than not, which in many ways means that, in that 70% of Pennsylvania where I was talking about, maybe I won't be, the overt recipient of discrimination. But that means that many of my trans women friends would be. At my best moments, maybe I'm a much more colorful gay man. And in those moments, maybe I would be subject to discrimination. And it's, as I said earlier, whether or not I cross a bridge, whether or not I cross a road or a sidewalk shouldn't determine whether or not I'm protected at law or not.
Thanks for the tweet. Sean, let me get, it looks like Bob from Center City, Philadelphia, to join our conversation. And Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? It seems that every time I call in, Brian's one of your guests. I'm a member of Gallup, and Brian is in Gallup.
He's not here every week. I just have to let you know that, Bob, but go ahead.
Well, it's good. It's good to have people, gay leaders, on your radio station. But listen, one of the things that the guy across from him or on the other line of the phone said is that the attorney general doesn't interpret the Constitution. Well, that's sort of like a misnomer. Attorneys and other people and the corporate community and even lay people have to make decisions about what the Constitution says. And it's based upon the plain meaning of the words of the Constitution, that's the Pennsylvania one and the U.S. Constitution, coupled with precedent. So we all make decisions as to what the meaning of the Constitution is. And the Attorney General can make those decisions, too. When the Supreme Court says that marriage equality is possibly a right, she can make that decision based upon what the Constitution says and what the court had already said. So saying the Attorney General can't interpret the Constitution, it's a misnomer.
Oh, Bob.
And then I just want...
Let me just give Brian Sims a chance, a quick response, if you don't mind.
No, I think he's 100% right. I think that what we saw is an attorney general doing exactly the job that we elected her to do.
And very briefly, Bob?
I just want to make a comment about the federal attempts to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and how Speaker Boehner said it's going to end up in lawsuits that are frivolous. Now, how can he say that when we know that there is a history of discrimination against the oppressed group of people who are sexual orientation minorities? He knows the history with blacks and civil rights movement, and he's going to say that these are going to be frivolous lawsuits? This is the type of thinking that comes from the right, and it has to stop. And people like Brian have to get out front like he's doing, and we have to do more and more of this to make the things change, to turn the tide, and bring the winds of change, just like Bob Dylan said. So... I'll take the comment off the
okay,
air.
Okay, Bob.
Thanks, nope. Brian. Call you guys later. Take care.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Anything you want to add to that?
I mean, I would share Bob's frustrations with the waste of resources. When Charlie spoke about the fact that the Attorney General chose not to defend DOMA and that it fell to the governor's office, it's the Office of General Counsel at the governor's office that is now defending it. And they're going to spend thousands upon thousands upon thousands of my tax dollars and your tax dollars and your listeners' tax dollars defending a law which even the opponents of now believe is going to become the law of the land. And that's a really important point. Even the opponents of equality now agree that equality is going to become the law of the land. And so here we are wasting tax dollars. And so I don't think that in his political calculation, it's intended to actually stop this from becoming law. I don't know what then it is intended to do other than to waste valuable resources.
And we have about a minute before I have to say goodbye, but even picking up on what Terry Madonna was said, but just from a political perspective, does it make sense to put workplace equality in front of marriage equality as
absolutely
an issue in Pennsylvania?
And it is. It is. You know, luckily, the same people working on marriage equality are the same people working on non-discrimination throughout the state and in Harrisburg. But non-discrimination is the fundamental right not to be discriminated against in all, essentially in all places. That is so much more important than a marriage right, which is a key civil right, no question. But non-discrimination impacts every single LGBT Pennsylvanian tomorrow, the moment that it becomes law. Marriage equality, it takes some time and it takes a relationship.
Even though you're an author of the equality bill in
Pennsylvania? Most definitely. But I am, as you said earlier, I'm a lead supporter of HB 300, have been my entire career. And it is the most important thing that I believe that we're working on in the Capitol mm-hmm. right now with respect to LGBT equality.
And are you optimistic?
I'm very. I think you've heard even today from opponents. I'm very, very optimistic about this.
Well, Brian Sims, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Again, Representative Brian Sims, our guest. He's a Democratic member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, serving the 182nd District in Philadelphia, the first openly gay person to serve in the Pennsylvania legislature. We've been talking about House Bill and Senate Bill 300. We also spoke with pollster Terry Madonna and Republican strategist Charlie Giroux. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can leave some comments there on our homepage. You can also check us out on Facebook, Twitter, email, archives, podcasts, and satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscoing. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.